If you boat, hunt, fish, worry about groundwater, or work for a business that draws in or discharges water, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is very important to you. So when there is a proposal to reorganize DNR, thanks to DNR Secretary Kathy Stepp for coming in to talk about that and other topics, welcome back to Wisconsin Eye.
It is great to be back. Thank you.
You have been at the helm of DNR for 6 years. What's wrong with the current structure of DNR? Why does it need to be reorganized?
This is really us having to face the fact that we've seen dwindling supply of human resources, and predominantly human resources, over the last 20 years. We've seen just about a 20% decrease in that area. So I know you and your viewers certainly understand that we don't have 20% less work to do over the last 20 years.
Right.
And we're not alone, Steve, in this situation. There are agencies like ours across the country that go through, that are going through these same fiscal challenges. But what I found after going to a lot of national meetings and listening to my colleagues from other states is, instead of lamenting about that and saying we need more money, we want more people, I came to the realization that with our legislature here in Wisconsin and with the governor, I needed to restructure the discussion, kind of reframe that, and do a really good job of bringing in private sector business management practices to lay out the case for decision makers in Madison on, if we need more people, here's where, here's what they do, here are the benefits that your constituents will receive as a result of those services. If you want to make cuts in human resources going forward, now they'll have a business-based product upon which to make those decisions, so that they can go back home then and explain to their constituents what work won't get done anymore. So this isn't a chicken little pie in the sky, you know, running around that we just can't make things work. We really can't do all the things we've been expected to do. So what we had to do is go through this very long and I think very worthwhile effort with input from all of my staff across the state, as well as external partners and stakeholders that we work with, find out what are the expectations of the customer, what are the thou shalts do that are given to us from the federal and state governments, and then what are the things that we're doing or how we're doing certain things. Either we can't do certain things anymore or we have to find a way to do them differently. So this work product I'm very, very proud of. We've had a lot of input, and I really think it's going to work to maximize the amount of human resources and fiscal resources that we have, working within our means, within our budget, and I think the legislature and the governor are going to be very happy with what they see.
What do you think, after 6 years on the job, what do you think is the biggest thing you have learned the agency cannot do anymore, to use your phrase?
Oh, gosh. You know, there's lots of little things around the edges. Really, what I think we shouldn't be wasting our time doing anymore is checking boxes and shuffling papers. And that's what this effort is looking to do, is to change that around. So by leveraging more of the expertise that's available in the private sector with arduous screening programs and approval programs to get on a list of assured professionals so that we can rely upon their submittals for different types of permits, okay, so that my folks can get out of their cubicles, out from under the fluorescent lights, into the field, and make sure that there's compliance happening on the ground with whatever someone's producing. Make sure they understand the rules, they know what the expectations are, and that they're following those. That, I think, is how we need to provide a much better return on investment to taxpayers and license payers and permit applicants.
That sounds like a pretty profound shift. Right now, is it fair to say right now your DNR professionals are writing the apps, and you want to reverse that so that businesses, farmers, consultants will be writing the apps?
They'll be writing portions of the application, the more technical, heavy side, and the one that's getting the most attention right now is large farming operations.
Right, the CFOs,
right.
Animal
so,
feeding organizations.
Right, and so there was a lot of controversy right away where people were saying we're going to let farmers write their own regulations and their standards. Nothing could be further from the truth. This isn't about that. The regulations, the standards stay the same. The law is staying the same. We're not changing any of that. First of all, I don't even have the authority to do that on my own, but we're not even looking to do that. What we're looking to do is, again, what we've been doing in Wisconsin over the last 10 years with wetlands, for example. We've created a program 10 years ago, the Wetland Delineator Assurance Program, and they go through a very strenuous, rigorous process to get on that list of Wisconsin DNR professionals, and then we can rely on their work so that we're not having to go back and redo all the technical work that's already been done by a paid professional in the private sector. We can rely on that work and use that as a basis to write the permit. So we still retain all the regulatory responsibilities and authority. We're the only ones, DNR, who can approve or deny a permit application. All that still stays with us. And then we can spend less time on paperwork and shuffling through hundreds and hundreds of pages and get out into the field to make sure that there's compliance.
There is a perception that Wisconsin is becoming home to more and more CAFOs. Is that true, or is that an unfair perception?
Well, there's a trend across the country, really, where
across
you're seeing...
Across the country.
Yeah, you are seeing larger operations, and I think that's just a matter of survival for a lot of these families. Okay. One thing that is important to note, which I wasn't aware of till I got this job, is that a lot of these large factory farms, as sometimes people call them, are run by families. So they're families who have acquired land and acquired assets over the years, and they've incorporated, and now they're called corporate farms. So, you know, these are still run in large part by Wisconsin residents, people who've raised their families here for generations and plan to continue to do that. So opening up the dialogue with producers, not just on the agricultural side of the equation, but on all the different sectors of Wisconsin's economy, has really been proven to be beneficial, I think, in environmental management in Wisconsin. So we can help prevent an infraction on the ground by having better relationships with people who are actually producing something, letting them come to us sooner with questions, making us approachable so that they feel safe to do that, and then being able to explain the regulations in plain language, especially for small and medium-sized producers.
The perception, though, of CAFOs can be pretty scary. Some of those numbers, like in Wood County, the one that was on page one today of the Journal Sentinel, propose 5,300 cows that would generate 55 million gallons of manure a year. Those are scary numbers if you live in the town of Saratoga, aren't they?
I'm sure some people have great concerns about that, and our regulatory team is making sure we pay attention to all the rules and the laws. I guarantee you that all of the standards and all of the regulations and laws, if we were to permit a facility like that or any other in Wisconsin, will be followed. So, but, you know, we're really the umpires. We get to call the balls and strikes in this game, and it's important that, you know, people understand we don't just have the authority just to say no because we feel like it. If an application meets the standards in the law, then we permit that facility. It remains to be seen yet what's going to happen on that particular one.
And what about Kewaunee County, where CAFOs are blamed, and I don't know if it's correctly or incorrectly, for some of the pollution of private wells? Now, the donation of drinking water to some of those homes can't go on forever. What do you think is a solution in Kewaunee County?
It is a wheel with a lot of different spokes to it. So I'm excited to tell you, this administration has been the one to actually put feet and hands into motion to solving the problem of groundwater contamination in Kewaunee County. And not just in Kewaunee, but surrounding counties and across the state. I mean, using this as an opportunity for us to do a better job to update what our rules and standards are for groundwater quality in Wisconsin. Very unique challenges there in that part of the state with the particular geology that's in place. Very rapid transit of contaminants into the groundwater system. It's shallow to groundwater. There's very little surface over the rock.
And soil is a part of that.
Exactly. Part of that. So that's okay. We've got a lot of challenges there. We've got failing septic systems in that part of the state. So there's human contamination, there's animal contamination, there's other kinds of contamination. Again, it's very easy to penetrate and to get into the groundwater. This has been a decades-long problem. This administration has been the one to put the money into the most expansive private well study ever done in Wisconsin to really take a bigger picture and dig really deep into the science of what are the causes of the contamination and what are possible solutions. We've done that in partnership with university as well. So we've got all the stakeholders that have been at the table to talk about what are better management practices that can be done with agricultural facilities on the ground to immediately impact water quality as well. We're now opening up NR 151, which is our administrative rule that regulates non-point, the agricultural runoff situations, and updating that because it's been a long time. And the thing I'm most excited about with this, Steve, is that we're going to have sound science upon which to base these decisions for the first time. That the public, from all aspects of this discussion, has been a part of those conversations and will continue to be. And I feel really good about being able to put forth a rule package that I think is going to give greater confidence to the public that we serve that their groundwater will be safer, and yet we can still have agricultural production in Wisconsin. I believe we can have both.
Well, follow-up question then. Did DNR, long before you got there, did it drop the ball and not do the science that led to the problem with polluted wells in Kewaunee County?
So I wouldn't cast aspersions on former administrations. You know, a lot of that particular program of DNR has been very short of money and human resources for a long time, long before I came here. The recent audit that came out from the Audit Bureau, where they did a very thorough review of that particular program and said, you know, you're short-staffed, you don't
you're
have
not
enough.
Meeting your target guidelines.
Exactly. So I already knew that. Okay, there is no revelation in this particular audit. The challenge that we've had is we've got lots of different pots of money from which we draw to fund certain aspects of our agency, and those have lots of strings attached. So it's not as if I can literally rob Peter to pay Paul over here without legal ramifications. So it's been a challenge. But again, that's why I come back to the alignment. I needed to make sure that I could assure policymakers in Madison, we have shaken every tree and looked under every rock for every nickel, and that the money that's been entrusted to us is being correctly used to provide the best return on investment. Once I've done that and I've established that, then I can go to the legislature and say, now, I've got a funding need here, and here's what I think it'll take, because we've done the research and the study to do that, to come up with what does it take to run the program, and I can make that business case. But just to go running to the legislature and the governor and say, I need more money, every agency does that in every administration, every budget cycle. So we had to do it different.
The agency critics, though, say with problems like Kiwanis County, with polluted home wells, it's the wrong time over the last 4 years to cut the agency's number of scientists. What's your response?
So one thing I really want to remind people of is that our agency is full of scientists. Okay, we've got biologists, geologists, hydrogeologists, all throughout the agency. They work out on the ground managing programs, managing wildlife, our fisheries team, et cetera. The portion of the department you're talking about is our research division. Mm-hmm. So there was a budget decision made last budget cycle that we had more researchers than the legislature thought was appropriate, and they decided to cut.
Was that part of your agency's recommendation to cut those
additional joint finance initiative.
Okay, mm-hmm.
And so, that again, we take our direction from the elected officials. They felt that there was research being done that shouldn't necessarily be within our bandwidth, and they made that decision. And again, as the administrator of the agency, it's my job then to, you know, figure out what it is that we can do with the resources we've got. What we're doing in this alignment, Steve, is we're putting the research team now that we've got still in Wisconsin DNR and aligning them into the divisions with which they would be doing that research for, okay? We've got a lot of questions out on the ground that our scientists who are out there managing all the programs and working with people have, and they need answers to those questions. And now by aligning the research team better with those on the ground managers, we can come up with those answers faster. So whatever our customers are looking to have, you know, solutions developed for, we'll be much better positioned now to direct and guide that research and those efforts, as well as continuing partnerships with the university, with other agencies, with other levels of government, for example. There's lots of other research pockets that we can go to help partner with us in those efforts.
What role can digesters play in addressing some of the issue raised by the CAFOs and the amount of waste that they produce?
Well, the logical conclusion is putting less solid waste out onto the ground, which is always a benefit. There are energy benefits to that potentially as well, as turning that into fuel and energy, so that's a good benefit. The water treatment part of that is the most crucial to me, is to make sure that there's a good, sound water treatment facility that's and requirement that's attached to that. It's one, again, of the, I think, of the spokes in the wheel. There's going to be a lot of significant questions and solutions that we're going to present to the legislature and to the governor as the outcome of this research we've done in Kewaunee County. Different policy decisions that are going to have to be made by those above my pay grade over in the legislature. But my job is to provide the science that they can rely upon to make those decisions. And by DNR not always being the one out in front on that science, but being supportive in the funding mechanism and the facilitator of those meetings, I think we'll have a lot more credibility from all sides of the discussion when we present those conclusions, and then they can make better policy decisions as a result of that. Something has to change in Wisconsin when it comes to how it is that we are able to regulate groundwater. And I do really fundamentally believe that this particular research project, these efforts we've done in Kewaunee County, will go a long way to build credibility for us.
Whose responsibility is it to address the well pollution in Kewaunee County? Is it the homeowner? Is it local government? Is it state government? And what, if any, role do the feds play in that?
Yeah, boy, there's the $64,000 question. Actually, it's a lot more money than that.
Yes.
Ultimately, by Wisconsin law, the private well owners, I mean, it's their responsibility to maintain and to test their well regularly. And that's the way the system is set up now. When there are contaminations, we've got processes in place to help people determine what's the source of that contamination. If it ends up being an agricultural source, or I should say an animal waste source, there are programs available sometimes through our agency in order for someone to maybe dig a new, deeper well, for example, if that might solve the problem. a lot of the well contamination
cases. And the
cases,
homeowner pays for that new well?
There's actually funding available for grants for them. Yeah, okay. So there is a program there. It's not heavily utilized, which we've tried to create more awareness to that program so that people understand it's there and available for them. But like any bureaucratic process, right, there's red tape and papers and all kinds of hoops that you have to jump through. So we are also looking at ways that we can make it more accessible and easier for people to take advantage of. But, you know, there are well construction standards, there are older wells, failing wells, caps not on wells. I'm a former home builder, so I'm very aware of how wells can be contaminated. We did lots of building sites out in rural areas where there are private wells, and those things are really important. And with some of the older established homes that have, you know, very shallow depth wells, they're the most likely to be contaminated the fastest. And so we have to kind of rethink those standards. Private on-site sewage treatment facilities, you know, your septics and your mound systems. I think there's going to be a discussion about that, on what kind of standards should be given the geology. And then, of course, as well as ag management practices. I think it's got to be really a holistic approach, and it's really not going to solve the problem to say just focus on large animal feeding operations. That's not the extent of the challenges that
we
have.
Do we need a moratorium on CAFOs until we can resolve some of these major important questions since they deal with groundwater?
Boy, that's not for me to say. You know, my job, again, is to make sure that if there are facilities that are looking to get permitted, that if, you know, we make sure that they meet all the very restrictive standards and expectations and plan submittals, et cetera, in order to be approved. So it's really not for me to say. That'd be more, I would say, at the policy level of local governments, county government, state government, ultimately.
Well, you talk about local government. The town of Saratoga, just as you know, passed 4-0 an ordinance, giving them new authority to inspect and regulate any CAFOs. Is it wise of local governments like the town of Saratoga to enact these local ordinances dealing with CAFOs?
Again, I'm not going to pass judgment on them. I really do understand the concerns that neighbors have and residents have. I also understand how emotional these issues are. I mean, you drive through that area, and I do quite a bit in my travels around the state. I see the signs. I've seen the attendance at the public meetings. My job and our staff's job is to provide the science and the factual data so that residents can know, you know, the factual scientific side of things, and local government officials as well. But, you know, when you're living in those communities and you're an elected official, it's a tough spot. So these issues can get really heated and highly emotional. My job is to take the emotion out and just to present the science and the regulatory side of things, and that's what we'll continue
to do. If the reorganization goes through and family XYZ wants to put a CAFO somewhere up north, mm-hmm. under the new process then, they would hire a consultant to do the app, and then a DNR professional would go through that app, correct?
Well,
and have a choice of what? Approving it, asking for more information, turning it down. Here's my question. Are there any new tighter deadlines for that DNR professional to make one of those three decisions?
No. We're not looking to change any deadlines. We're not looking to put pressure on our staff to come up with an answer faster. My goal is always about the highest level of quality in the shortest period of time. So we don't want speed to be the enemy of a well-written permit. It's most important to me to make sure that the right and most appropriate things are written as conditions into the permit within the confines of our authority, which is within the confines of state law, and we have to stay within those sideboards. But the part we're talking about here is an idea to have nutrient management plans, which is just one portion of the submittal that these facilities make to our agency. But that's the most arduous technical time, you know, modeling and a lot of different things that have to be done and presented, and many times are hundreds of pages long in a submittal. That's the part that's the most time consuming, and that's the one that keeps my staff in their cubes, you know, under the fluorescent lights, instead of being out there working with producers, out there inspecting facilities to make sure things are being done right. So if we develop a program like we did with wetlands to where there's a very rigorous screening process on the individual engineer, not on the firm, okay, that's also important to differentiate, but to make sure that that individual is educated, accredited, and that there are consequences if we get bad submittals. Meaning, you know, if we end up approving something and there's, you know, something else that happens as a result of an incorrectly submitted application, we're going to develop what all those rules are. We're not that far yet. We've just thrown this out here as an idea to help alleviate the workload so that, again, we can reprioritize our work efforts outside.
You've heard agency critics say that the number of scientists was cut after the impact mining study was done on the Ashland Iron proposed mine, which was then dropped.
Right.
Is that an unfair criticism?
Boy, I'm not even going to pass judgment on that. As a former legislator, and I was a very vocal critic of this department, as you remember back in the day, when you see things just from the outside, which is really where a legislator, that's where their perspective is from. They're not obviously inside like I am every day. I think it would have been very easy for them to make that conclusion, that they were unhappy about some of the studies that had been that our researchers had been working on in different parts of the country and even different parts of the world. So there was criticism there, and you know, their reaction was, maybe you've got more researchers than you need, and so we're going to cut that down a little bit, and now what are you going to do with the resources we've given you? Okay. So again, I'm very respectful of that process. We are the state's workforce. We take our direction and our lead from the decision makers who are elected officials, and it's our job to carry out their will. We'll do the best we can to advise them on the technical side of that, but at the end of the day, it's their call.
Follow-up question. If another mining company showed interest in the Ashland Iron site, would DNR have the scientists to do another potential impact study of a new mine up there?
Well,
or would you have to hire that out?
I don't know, Steve, because I think it'll depend on the scope of the project. There's a lot of variables there. There's been a lot of research done already, you know, and some of the impacts that we talk about with a facility like that would be groundwater, quantity, quality, wetlands. There's so many different facets of it. Again, any kind of facility that could be potentially going onto Wisconsin's landscape is going to be rigorously reviewed, not just by Wisconsin DNR, but in the case of a mine, it would have also been EPA and Army Corps of Engineers, lots of layers of regulatory oversight. So I don't know that there would be a need necessarily to have another research project on the impacts of mining. So I don't really feel confident that that would be necessary, but I sure wouldn't want to call yes or no.
Do you expect another mining company to eventually at some point show interest in that same site?
I have no idea. I think in great part it's going to depend on what the price of iron is, right? I mean, that's a big driving factor. I think it was a driving factor in this other company's decision as well, is whether or not they stayed with it or pulled out. So many different economic factors impact those decisions.
Some wrap-up questions on the reorganization. Would it reduce the number of DNR law enforcement officers?
No. As a matter of fact, oh gosh, I'm glad you remembered to bring this up because this is important. Right now in Wisconsin DNR, we've got law enforcement employees that have the credentials. So they've got the badge and the gun and, you know, the responsibilities that come with that and the required training spread out over about 165 different employees. Now, not all 165 of them do law enforcement all the time. Really, just our core warden force does that all the time, 100% of their job duties. And so we had to take a look at all the different fragments. Some of our, say, park rangers and forest rangers were really only doing law enforcement duties about 10 to 15% of the time. The rest of the time was, say, a park superintendent, for example, would be having to fix a light, repair a sign, shovel off a trail, fix a toilet, deal with social, you know, problems that are happening on a campground, et cetera. More of the social side, the customer service side of things, and far less on law enforcement. So given today's climate when it comes to law enforcement, the extraordinary scrutiny that law enforcement officers are under, I felt it was most important, and it wasn't just me, this came again from the ground up from our team, to be able to consolidate that expertise, and the end result is going to be 33 more full-time conservation officers at Wisconsin DNR than what we have today. And their roles will change up a little bit in that they'll now be doing enforcement work on state parks where wardens didn't traditionally do that. But we're also going to be able to reallocate our resources where the highest need is. So where the most human interaction is and the most possibility for challenges for law enforcement, we've now got more law enforcement professionals that'll be full-time, always on their game, always the sharpest and ready to go on law enforcement side of things. And that's not to say our existing force isn't good, but I think it's unfair to expect them to be ready at a second's notice to be able to draw upon all of that training when they only do it 10 to 15% of their time. So again, I'm proud of the work that our team has done to date, but it's a time to do things differently, and we've got needs that I think will be solved by this chance.
You mentioned the parks. Was the experiment to not subsidize the parks with GPR a success?
Well, I don't know that it's an experiment.
Okay, it's policy. Permanent policy.
I mean,
that was my word, not
right,
yours.
Right, so right. That's what I'm kind of planning.
Was the new
on.
Policy to not subsidize parks with GPR a success that should go forward?
Well, that remains to be seen. So we've had to put a plan together again, and by doing this alignment to be able to shift some resources to help manage in those areas, I think that's going to be very helpful for us. Our current path that we were on was not sustainable for our parks. It just was not. So we really, again, have to think about a different way to do business. We recently submitted a plan to the legislature. They had asked us to do that, I think, a year ago. Just submitted it to them the other day on different opportunities or funding ideas to supplement state park funding. We've done that. I'm sure some people will try to make more out of some of the things that we put in the report as different ideas for legislators to consider. I'm not looking to sell off naming rights to any parks. Okay. So before Senator Erpenbach decides to say that, but, it's not true.
But users of the parks should be expect to pay more to use them in the next season?
I don't know. That kind of remains to be seen. So we've got some different funding ideas. We did not see a decrease in usership, by the way, from the last price increase we recently had. In fact, we had either record or near record attendance last year. Okay. So the state parks are still a tremendous bargain for people. And really, I think the jewels of the nation when it comes to building memories with families and being able to appreciate the outdoor blessings of Wisconsin, we are extraordinarily gifted in that area. And we plan to do everything we can to continue the success of our state parks and to even lift that. So that's our goal.
Now, a final question on the reorganization. Can you promise Wisconsin residents that it will not jeopardize our natural resources?
Absolutely.
Okay.
In fact, I'm doing everything I can to make sure that we are doing the job on the ground that they expect and demand us to do. So we can't keep going the way we were going, and to keep doing things like we were doing them 20 years ago does not work anymore. It's a new age. There's technology. There are mobile apps now. We've got to get into this century, Steve, and we've got to start bringing in private sector business management practices into government and not apologize for that. That's not a bad thing. The taxpayers, license payers, permit applicant payers, they want service, but they also want environmental protection, wildlife management, fisheries, and state parks. They want all those same things that we're expected to deliver. We have to do a better job at doing that, and this alignment puts us on that path.
Okay, let's wrap up with four questions on non-reorganization issues. First, do you consider the most recent gun deer hunt a success with fewer hunters buying permits and fewer deer being harvested?
Well, I think we're only down about 1% at the end of the day, so we're still within, you know, the margin of error, I will say, in political
terms.
So
you didn't see any major warning signs?
No, I didn't. In fact, we're still seeing strong numbers in women. We're seeing strong numbers in youth participation. We're seeing better harvest numbers of bucks in the north, which is a good sign. We still have a long way to go in the north, by the way, in the herd. So we've still got a lot of challenges there. But I think the beauty to me of this last season was getting to see some of the recommendations of our county deer advisory committees be implemented on the ground, where people really had a partnership stake in deer management in Wisconsin, and that we're seeing some positive results from that. There's always going to be fluctuations in license number sales and harvest numbers as well. Weather, there's lots of things that impact those numbers, but I'm not concerned about that. I feel really good about it.
Is CWD a growing problem for our deer herd?
Well, it's a growing problem across the country. I mean, this is something that's a big challenge for us. It's not nearly as devastating a disease as some of the others that affect the herd. You know, TB and blue tongue, I think, are just two of the ones that I can think of off the top of my head. But it is something that we're continuing to monitor. We're continuing to test. We're always looking at the different scientific studies that are coming out around the country, even around the world, on this disease. We can't go back to the ways of the initial outbreak because that didn't work. The social acceptance was nil. And so for the sad thing about CWD to me, Steve, in Wisconsin, is that some would like to use it as a political issue. And a disease that affects something that's so precious to Wisconsinites should never be political. The politicians that like to, and others that like to throw stones at what we're doing with CWD or not doing with CWD, I asked the basic question, what would you do? And there's no answer. So that tells you a lot.
Second issue, should Congress delist the wolf?
Yes.
A huge issue in northern Wisconsin.
Yes, 100% yes.
Okay.
Very frustrating for residents in the northern part of our state. Very challenging when it comes to dealing with livestock herds, you know, hunting dogs, family pets. These have real impacts on citizens in the northern third of the state. We've done everything we can from our role at Wisconsin DNR to make our case that we did a really good job managing our first couple of wolf hunts. We did very conservative harvest numbers the first couple of years, so not to, you know, present an image that we're over-harvesting. We have a very, very robust population in Wisconsin that needs to be managed, and we absolutely need help from the federal government on
that.
Third
issue, one of the most controversial issues in central Wisconsin is the Central Sands high-capacity wells. Mm-hmm. Do we need a new law, new standards to deal with that issue?
We are going to need legislative help on that, and we don't have clear enough direction from the legislature and state law to help us make the best possible regulatory decisions on the ground. The challenge with that, Steve, is there isn't really good existing science out there when we're talking about water quantity now in that part of the state. There's not really good research out there to be able to, we've done some in this administration. Again, we're about doing things, not just talking about them, okay? So we put money into research to be done on the Little Plover River, for example, trying to see what are the effects on, surface water, what's the rate of flow, et cetera, and quantity questions. There's a lot of unanswered questions, and I think that's hard now for legislators to be able to know what's the best direction to go on. But there are challenges out there, and unfortunately my agency can only make decisions within the confines of state law. Okay. The Attorney General made that very clear to us recently,
yes,
and we're going to continue to abide by that.
So you want the Assembly, Senate, and the Governor to draw some new rules for your agency on the high-capacity groundwater issue in the Central Sands area.
I offer my staff's technical service to be able to come up with a good piece of legislation. I've offered that for 6 years now, that we do need further clarification in the law and to allow us to put certain conditions on, like monitoring wells, for example, so that we can be alerted of a challenge on a facility before it causes degradation. I think there's a lot of benefits there, and hopefully we'll see a legislator come forward this next session.
And then the final question on non-reorganization. What do you expect differently out of the EPA now that we have we will be having a President Trump? Less rules and regulations on DNR? What vibes are you getting?
Let me tell you what I'm hoping happens. I am hoping that there's a fundamental shift in the relationship between not just EPA but all federal agencies and their states, the states that they supposedly work with, and I'm going to use air quotes for that. I think a revitalized relationship between EPA and state environmental quality agencies like ours could be far better suited if they allow us as state regulatory agencies and state producers to be the laboratories of better management practices. A great example is the phosphorus standards in Wisconsin and some of the things we put forward as a leader in this country on phosphorus, different ways of being able to do adaptive management practices to get us to the standards, which are far less, loading of phosphorus into the waters. I think that'd be fantastic to give us the leeway to do that, that when we are delegated to run a program like the Clean Water Act or Clean Air Act, that we're really delegated and that we don't have to always be looking for a gargoyle over our shoulders to come in at the last second or even after deadlines have passed to tell us that they didn't like XYZ. It's like, look, as long as we're in the confines of the law and the rules, we should be allowed to run these programs. A, we don't get enough money to run the programs anyway from the feds, and that needs to be changed as well if they still want us to continue to carry out all these different things that they want us to do. But B, really, it could be far more collaborative to get, say, regional directors, for example, at the EPA and all the different regions to collaborate and work with their state DNR secretaries to find out what and be kind of an incubator of ideas on better ways to protect the environment and still have economic growth. You absolutely can have both. It can be done. We're showing that in Wisconsin right now.
So you want a devolution of power.
I do.
With President Trump from the feds to the state governments like ours.
I think there's a lot, and that's not to say the EPA shouldn't still have an oversight role, because you do want to make sure that still states are doing things and regulating appropriately on the ground. But for the amount of employees that are at that agency, the way it's structured is very convoluted, very bureaucratic, very duplicative for what the state agencies are doing anyway. We are the ones doing the work on the ground. Let us do the work on the ground, and let us just demonstrate to you how much cleaner our air is, how much cleaner our water is. And when we're allowed to be measured by that yardstick, there are no limits to the successes environmentally we will be able to see on the ground. Because I know producers that are out there that want to do the right things and want to be innovators in that area. Let's give them the freedom to do that, and then get out of the way and see just how much better we all are.
DNR Secretary Kathy Stepp, thanks for the update on these very important issues.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.